Welcome to the most listened to golf in the world, the Fairways of Life show, on air, online, and around the world. With the most candid interviews, unforgettable stories, taking you beyond the ropes. Here's your host, New York Times best-selling author and Golf Channel's Matt Adams.
Welcome into the 122nd U.S. Open. We are live at the Country Club here in Brookline, Massachusetts. What an incredible place to be. I am Matt Adams, and I'm so honored to be able to share this space with all of you from wherever you're joining us, coast to coast. This is such a cool place. Not only is it beautiful, but the history of these grounds is so stout and so important into the game of golf. The picture you're looking at there, the clubhouse up on the left, but all of these greens, they're small, these raised green complexes, that from 1913. Francis, we met with Ted Ray to his right, or Harry Vardon on the other side. Those two guys went into a playoff with Francis we met one at 20 years old and brought golf from below the fold to the top of sports pages and in many cases to the front pages of newspapers around the country. And from 1913 on, that was when golf started to become more of a sport of the people. It grew immensely from there, and it all happened right here on this stage that is Brookline and the Country Club. It has been an amazing week here. Now, many of the players came in this week, obviously with great hopes for all that would lie ahead. One of them that spoke to what it takes to win an event of this stature, and he's won multiple major championships, was Brooks Koepka. So in this piece, we get into his mindset.
A lot of discipline. Whether that means, you know, laying up off tees just to hit fairways, missing in the correct spots, not being suckered into any pin locations, whether, even though it might be, you know, a goat yardage for you or anything like that. But you just got to be disciplined, stay kind of always in that moment. Never get, you know, you're going to make a bunch of bogeys, try not to make a double bogey. That's always been my big goal in majors, is if you never make a double bogey out here, you're doing all right. And you get out of trouble, get back in position. And that's the key to U.S. Open.
Brooks Koepka with those keys to the U.S. Open. As you can see behind me here in the media center, it is still early, but already getting busy for the day that lies in store. Now, Rory McIlroy was looking forward to all that lies in store. He already has a career that will definitely put him into the Hall of Fame. But Rory McIlroy spoke to his legacy.
I hope I'm still building on my legacy. You know, I'm in golfing terms, still young-ish. You know, even though I've been out here for a long time, I've basically spent half my life on tour at this point. But it's very important to me. It means a lot. Going back to history and tradition, and putting your name on trophies that have the legends of the game on them. That's really cool. You know, and that's something that money can't buy. And, you know, legacy, reputation, at the end of the day, you know, that's all you have. You know, you strip everything away and you're left with how you made people feel and what people thought of you. And, you know, that is important to me.
Rory McIlroy always seems to say the right thing. Scottie Scheffler is trying to sort it all out as well. Here is Scottie on his thoughts prior to the U.S. Open.
I like the challenge. I think these events are really hard, obviously. And for me, I think it's kind of fun just challenging yourself like that. And this style of golf, I think, really suits how I play and suits mentally how I approach tournaments. And so for me, I'm excited for this week and getting started.
Jon Rahm is ready to battle it out for another U.S. Open trophy. At least he was when these comments were made before the start of the tournament. And one of the things that Jon Rahm was asked about is finding a balance between what's going on with the PGA Tour and what's going on with the new upstart tour called LIV Golf.
Jay Monahan, if you see his time as a commissioner, he had to deal with COVID and now this. I don't know if he signed up for all this or not, but I consider the PGA Tour has done an amazing job giving us the best platform for us to perform. I do see the appeal that other people see towards the LIV Golf. I do see some of the, how do I put this delicately, points or arguments they can make towards why they prefer it. To be honest, part of the format is not really appealing to me. Shotgun 3 days to me is not a golf tournament, no cut. It's that simple. I want to play against the best in the world in a format that's been going on for hundreds of years, right? So that's what I want to see. And yeah, money is great, but when Kelly and I, this first thing happened, we started talking about it. We're like, will a lifestyle change if I got $400 million? No, it will not change one bit. Truth be told, I could retire right now with what I've made and I've lived a very happy life and not play golf again. So I've never really played the game of golf for monetary reasons. I play for the love of the game, and I want to play against the best in the world. I've always been interested in history and legacy, and right now the PGA Tour has that. There's some meaning when you win the Memorial Championship. There's some meaning when you win Arnold Palmer's event at Bay Hill. There's some meaning when you win LA, Torrey, some of these historic venues. And that to me matters a lot, right? I have, you know, after this winning this past US Open, you know, only me and Tiger have won at Torrey Pines, and we're both the golf course that we like, making putts on the 18th hole, right? That's a memory I'm gonna have forever that not many people can say. So my heart is with the PGA Tour, that's all I can say. It's not my business or my character to judge anybody who thinks otherwise. And for a lot of people, I'm not gonna lie, those next 3-4 years are worth basically their retirement plan they're giving them. It's a very nice compensation to then retire and sail off to the sunset. And if that's what you want, that's fine.
I think these conversations about LIV Golf amongst players and with players will be continuing for some time. What does it all mean? We're going to unpack that on today's show. We'll also be joined by a player who played very well here the last time the U.S. Open was here. Stay with us.
At Ben Hogan Golf, we do things differently. We handcraft our clubs to your specifications, and we only sell online so you don't pay retail markup. We make exceptional golf clubs and deliver them directly to your door. Now that's different.
In Ireland, golf is more than just a game. Come and experience our world-famous links courses and our world-famous parkland courses, all set alongside world-famous scenery. And visit our world-famous historic sites. And while you're here, enjoy our world-famous hospitality. Press the green button and start your journey at ireland.com/golf.
Hey, Bryson.
What up?
I was just going through Bridgestone's new online ball fitting.
Pretty sweet, huh?
Yeah, very cool. I just got fit to that new Tour BXS I've been playing.
Nice, I got fit to the Tour BX. It's a little faster.
Hold on, here's Fred.
Hey guys.
Am I doing this right?
You've never looked better, Freddy. Find your fit at BridgestoneGolf.com.
Are you ready for golf's biggest season ever? Because we are. Our certified fitters are waiting to fit you for free with the latest clubs from Callaway, TaylorMade, Cobra, Titleist, and more. Plus, shop the latest gear and apparel from all your favorite brands. Experience golf's biggest selection under one roof. Don't just shop this season, shop with the pros at the PGA Tour Superstore.
The Fairways of Life show is live weekdays at 8 a.m. Eastern Time and 24/7 on demand as a digital radio and streaming television show. Download the Fairways of Life app and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Log in to fairwaysoflife.com for more information.
Are you an E or a C?
Both have Ridgeback.
These are loaded with tech.
Which one are you gaming?
Definitely E for me.
It's just so forgiving.
I'm definitely an E.
C is for checkout. What else?
C is for kill it.
C is me. Low spinning bombs.
So, are you an E or a C?
I don't know. Hey, wait a minute.
Pound for pound, nothing comes close.
This is the Wiz. It tracks your swing in real time.
Got it.
101.
Gives you feedback in real time.
Do you feel where you are in your golf swing?
Transition, plus 4.2 inches. Length of backswing, 50.3 inches.
The Wiz have really helped me to keep that consistent swing.
Instead of guessing, I get the direct feedback.
Transition on plane.
That's the mic drop.
Oh.
Welcome back to the U.S. Open here at the 122nd edition. We sit on the eve of the same on this Wednesday. I am inside of the media center here at the Country Club. What a special place these grounds are. The Country Club is such a cool place to be. As to the weather, because it is so much a question of any U.S. Open, but with the winds that they are suggesting that will come in over the next few days, as well as the conditions of the golf course themselves, both of them are going to play a part in it. There you can see that the temperature today is expected to crest out somewhere around 80. And then overnight, the lows are going to be around 60. This is perfect weather for growing grass, especially if you give it just a little sip, maybe of only dew. On Thursday there, you can see the high of 82. On Friday, it's going to be 76. You can see steadily the winds are increasing, and in particular, the gusts are increasing as the week progresses. And into the weekend, the temperature is getting a little bit lower than what it was throughout the course of the week, but the winds still hanging in there after that. We will be talking to our next guest, who's coming up in just a couple of minutes, about the conditions of the golf course. First of all, I want to make sure that you guys are aware of how, when, and where you can get your coverage of the U.S. Open, because it is spread, as you can see on our charts, if you're watching us on the television side, across multiple networks in the NBC family, starting at 6:45 a.m. Thursday morning on Peacock, at 9:30 a.m. on USA Network, 2 p.m. on NBC, 5 p.m. back on USA, and 7 p.m. once again on Peacock. That will be the coverage for both Thursday and for Friday, so that you guys are fully up to speed on when and where you can get it, at 6:45 a.m. starting on Peacock. On round three, 10 a.m. on Peacock until noon, and then from noon to 8 p.m. on NBC will be for round three. Round four, the final round, on Sunday, 9 a.m. on Peacock, 10 a.m. on USA, and then noontime on NBC, up until the conclusion of this 122nd edition. Now, when we talk about this golf course, what makes it so special, the conditions, both in weather and how the golf course has been prepped for this U.S. Open, one who has been there, one who has played in U.S. Opens, one who has been thoroughly on these grounds, is the 1992 Arnold Palmer Award recipient. That title of distinction he carries with him because he was the Rookie of the Year on the PGA Tour that year. He's a winner on the PGA Tour, and he is our guest right now. Mark Carnevale is joining us. Carney, how are you? How has your week been going so far?
Hey, it's going great, Matt. Doing good. The week so far is it's the buildup. As we see every, not only every U.S. Open, but every major event, there's a lot of excitement in the air. You know, us on the broadcast side, as you know, trying to get a feel for the golf course, chatting with a few of the players to get a sense of how the golf course is going to play. But a lot of anticipation, and it's almost like, you know, you get here. I got here yesterday morning. And you could already feel the buildup. Everybody's ready to go. It's just a matter of time, as you know, they just have not started the race yet.
What were your impressions of the golf course when you saw it, Carney, for the first time this week?
Unbelievable. I mean, it just, in a lot of ways, it reminds me, I never played in the event here. It's been a while since I've been here. But it reminded me a lot of, in some ways, Bethpage. It reminded me a lot of Westchester Country Club in some ways. And in some cases, it reminded me a little bit of last week up at St. George's Golf and Country Club up in Toronto. It's a beautiful layout. It looks extremely difficult. I've chatted with some of the players. It's going to be a challenge. And while the rough, I think, was going to be a challenge for these guys, you can get a little lucky. Otherwise, if you're not, you're going to see a lot of players just wedging out from there, as we've seen in typical U.S. Opens in the past. But that's okay. I mean, you know, golf, luck is part of the game of golf. You need to get lucky, obviously, to win any tournament, but certainly major championships. But I'm excited. I think the golf course is beautiful. I think Gohan's did a great job in what they, some of the renovations they've done to the golf course, and I'm excited for it.
Carney, you talked about the rough specifically. I'm also curious about, how would you describe the greens themselves, the green complexes, and the bunkers that protect the same?
I know they've enlarged them a little bit, but they still look pretty small, which becomes a challenge not only from fairways, but particularly from the rough when you're trying to get into a quadrant of the green in order to give yourself a chance, obviously, for birdie and possibly to save par. That's where I think you'll probably, because of the size of them, and I'm going to be wrong because as talented and as aggressive as a lot of the players are in this game that we're, you know, where we're at. You'll see players going for holes, but because of the smallness of them, because of the rounding off of around all the greens, the bunkering, you're going to have to be pretty confident that you're going to be able to pull off that shot. So there's going to be, particularly once we get down, I would think, to the weekend, and maybe players should do it now, but you really need to pick and choose your spots, particularly out of the rough if you want to be aggressive. But they're very, you know, the speeds are going to be great. They're obviously very speedy downhill. Overall, they're probably not as fast yet as they will be, but it's going to be a typical U.S. Open, it's going to be challenging. I think it's going to be another example when par is a good score, and you're going to have to really make sure if you decide to go after something that you're going to need to execute it well, and you're going to be buffered. Because as we know, this game, this is not a game of hitting the great shots, because they all hit great shots. It's how do you play your misses and position it. And you need to leave it underneath the hole to be able to, I think, to give yourself a very good chance to get shots up and down. So it'll be interesting to see how they attack it. Again, it was 1988, the last time the U.S. Open was held here. Golf has changed a lot, Matty, in those years with the aggressive play, the equipment and everything. So it'll be interesting to see how these guys play this golf course.
Yeah, really curious about the same, Carney, and to kind of pick up on some of the things that you have already mentioned or alluded to, we've heard from multiple players that you cannot overpower this golf course, which again is interesting in the context of how much the game has changed and the aggression that most players at the top tier take to the sport anyway. Yet they're saying this is a course that can't be overpowered. You have to be playing to the spots that you duly mentioned. You have to be playing away from the trouble that you mentioned as well, namely that very thick fescue rough if you are particularly wayward. And then there's the green complexes in terms of the false fronts that they have, the very deep bunkers that they have, the way that the greens lay themselves out, the speed, all that goes into it. How much, Carney, from what you've seen so far and what you anticipate from what you're hearing, is Mother Nature also going to be a factor in this U.S. Open, given how the golf course is getting faster as it dries out and given the fact that we're expecting some pretty stout gusts of wind throughout the course of the tournament?
Well, certainly wind is always a factor, whether it's a soft golf course or a golf course that's firm and fast. And based on the forecast, if we don't get any moisture, I can tell you by Saturday and certainly by Sunday, this is going to be a very fast golf course. Not only will the greens be fast, but the fairways, I think, are going to be fast. So you're going to have to be very accurate, I think, off the tee. And while if you're a straight long hitter like a Rory McIlroy and some of the other guys, and I'm not trying to single just Rory out, but I think he's probably under the gun. He's probably the straightest, longest driver of the golf ball on tour, in my opinion. The stats could lead me wrong. But I think you're going to have to – it's not necessarily going to lend itself to favoring a long hitter unless they can find the fairway. So I think we're going to get a great mix of different styles of play. Now, all these guys hit it long enough. I mean, they compete on the PGA Tour week in and week out, and they're all long enough. But I think you could probably see some other players in the mix that are straight drivers of the golf ball and very good short games because that's what's going to come into place here. But if we can avoid any moisture throughout this championship week, this is going to be a real challenge.
And that challenge lies just outside of the city of Boston. Boston, obviously, a very passionate city for sport. It's particularly today because you've got Red Sox in town, you've got the Celtics playing, you've got the U.S. Open happening in Brookline, which is just a couple of miles from the border of Boston City proper, all that's happening here. What about the buzz in general, Carney? Can you talk to us about what you've been feeling and experiencing so far?
It's been great. I mean, obviously, over the last two seasons, it's been limited. I mean, we're limited attendance at Torrey last year when John Rahm won. All I can speak is I was on the ground in Toronto last week for the Canadian Open. And the Canadian Open's been around 110-plus years. And obviously, Canadians are great golf fans. The way they came out to support their national championship, like we see year in and year out for the most part, and for the U.S. Open, I think it's going to be crazy. I know Boston fans are great fans, and they've drawn all from the Northeast. So We just don't want to single out Boston. Massachusetts is hosting this event.
Good point.
But there are great fans all over this country that have been able to make that journey now after a few years of being uncertain. And I think it's going to be great. I think it's going to be interesting in many ways, Maddie, with what's going on in this game, how certain players will be received this week. I think that's an unknown. I'm not saying it's going to be a factor in anything, but I think it's an unknown. But I think golf fans in general are glad to be back at full occupancy. And I drove around the golf course a little bit yesterday, going to walk a little bit today. And you can feel the excitement in the air without question. And this obviously, this venue has such is just strut with history in the game of golf. When you go back to Francis, we met. I mean, it's special to be back here with the fact that now fans can really enjoy the U.S. Open like they normally do.
Yeah, there's no doubt, Carney. I love the way that you framed all that for fans from Boston, for fans from New England, for fans from wherever they have come to here at the Country Club for this 122nd U.S. Open. There is a great deal of passion. There is a great deal of excitement. And there is an element of catharsis here, the fact that we're all together again celebrating the game of golf, despite any other issues that are floating around. There are plenty of those, and you're going to be hearing from players coming up, folks, with their reaction to questions that they were asked about LIV, including Brooks Koepka, who was tired of talking about it. And maybe that's not a bad emotion to have right now as we sit on the eve of the start of this U.S. Open. Carney, before we lose your company this morning, can I ask you this? What are you doing this week on the grounds? Who are you broadcasting for, and how can we see or hear it?
Yeah, we'll be on U.S. Open radio on Sirius XM. We will start broadcasting. Obviously, we got programming all day, but our coverage of the U.S. Open will start at 2 p.m. on Thursday and then run until completion. Same start times Thursday through Sunday. I know that if you're fans on the golf course, American Express has the earpieces that you're going to be able to get. We'll be on there. But I will be the analyst this week alongside Brian Katrick. So fortunately, I don't have to walk the golf course, Matt. After last week in Canada, it was a tough walk, but I'm going to be watching. It's going to be exciting. So you'll be able to get us on SiriusXM. I know the U.S. Open app as well.
That sounds great, Carney. Thank you so much for your time. I'm looking forward to catching up with you here on the grounds. Hopefully our paths will cross somewhere along the way. But I do thank you indeed, and particularly for your observations, helping all of us to get ready for what surely will be a great U.S. Open on an incredible and, as you mentioned, historic venue. Thank you, my friend.
You got it, my friend. Always great work, Maddie. Always great being with you, and hope to catch up with you for sure.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. So, folks, this broadcast, as it is day in and day out, is presented by the PGA Tour Superstore. The PGA Tour Superstore is the number one golf retailer in the land, and the reason why is because they have, well, anything you could possibly need for your game of golf, whether you put it on your feet, whether you put it on your body, whether you swing it. But they are even more than that. You can tune up your game at the PGA Tour Superstore. You can go in and get fit. Maybe you've never been really fit for your clubs before, but you can get fit. I'm talking about putters. I'm talking about wedges. I'm talking about irons. I'm talking about drivers, hybrids, your fairway metals. All of them. Think about the possibilities. You can be better, and you can be better because the equipment is fit to you instead of you having to get fit to the equipment. Do you know what I'm talking about with that? Just log on to pjtoursuperstore.com. It's a great place to get started where you can see it all, and it's not too late to find that perfect gift for dad. Remember, the one size that fits all is always a gift card from the PGA Tour Superstore and DeWiz. DeWiz is that wearable technology. You've probably seen the spots that we have here in the Fairways of Life show. This technology is incredible. You can see it. It looks great. But what it is it works with neuroscience so that your golf swing, you can know where you are in your golf swing unlike you've ever known before. And you can work on being in the proper position with instant feedback to tell you what you're doing, what your feels should be, so that you can make your golf swing as good as it possibly can be for you. Beautiful swing right there. And instant feedback coming back right there. DeWizGolf.com is where you can get more information on that. More of the Fairways of Life show coming up after this. We're going to hear from the players next. Boyne Golf provides the ultimate world-class golf destination with 10 championship-caliber courses spanning three resorts. Centered in Michigan's northern Lower Peninsula, the courses are the products of some of the game's masters, including Robert Trent Jones Sr., Arthur Hills, and Donald Ross. From the all-inclusive vacation packages, elite instruction with the Boyne Golf Academy, tournaments, and so much more, Boyne Golf truly offers an unrivaled Michigan golf vacation experience. Just log on to BoyneGolf.com.
Yes, hello world, huh?
And with one subtle hello, Tiger began an amazing and unthinkable career.
I've done it for 20 years now with Bridgestone. It allows me to play an aggressive style around the greens, and it's allowed me to win a lot of tournaments.
Bridgestone Golf, proud to be part of your journey.
The Fairways of Life show is live weekdays at 8 a.m. Eastern Time and 24/7 on demand as a digital radio and streaming television show. Download the Fairways of Life app and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Log in to fairwaysoflife.com for more information.
Premium golf equipment doesn't have to be expensive. At Ben Hogan Golf, we design and custom build our clubs and sell them directly to you. And you can try any club for just $25 at benhogangolf.com.
Are you ready for golf's biggest season ever? Because we are. Our certified fitters are waiting to fit you for free with the latest clubs from Callaway, TaylorMade, Cobra, Titleist, and more. Plus, shop the latest gear and apparel from all your favorite brands. Experience golf's biggest selection under one roof. Don't just shop this season. Shop with the pros at the PGA Tour Superstore.
Created without the constraints of time or money, PXG golf clubs are the most technologically advanced available today, and they are a perfect union of art, science, and engineering. And the PXG experience is unlike any you've had before. After you've been custom fit, your clubs will be built to exacting standards and your exact specs in the USA. So when you hear it, you know. PXG. Nobody builds golf clubs the way we do. Period.
Nestled amongst the hills of the Hoosier National Forest resides a classic American destination, the French Lick Resort. Experience the ultimate in golf at the Pete Dye Course at French Lick, voted number one course in Indiana on Golf Week's Best You Can Play for 10 years in a row. The Donald Ross Course at French Lick has been named Indiana's number two course in Golf Week's Best You Can Play rankings every year since 2011. Come experience old world opulence amid modern comfort served with Midwestern charm. Visit FrenchLick.com.
Welcome back. Live coverage of the 122nd U.S. Open as we sit on the eve of the start of the national championship here from the Country Club in Brookline, Massachusetts. It is an incredible place, and we have been so honored to share your company throughout the build-up to, and now here we are on the edge of the start. As you guys know, it is a major championship, and we fully understand and respect the fact that once play gets underway, you don't want anything from us. You want the golf that will be taking place on the course. So we, too, will be enjoying the golf along with you guys over the next few days and taking it all in. Some of those marquee groups, Dom, I'm interested in those that you kind of picked out for the world to see. Obviously, these are not all the tee times. We have that, too. But these are some of the groups that stood out to you, yes?
Absolutely. If you're watching on the TV side, you can see the threesomes there on the screen. And, you know, it's the U.S. Open. At 7:18, you got Colin Morikawa, James Pyatt, John Rahm. 7:29, all these times are Eastern, obviously. Jordan Spieth, Adam Scott, Max Homa. 7:40, Rory McIlroy, Hideki Matsuyama, Xander Schauffele. At 1:14, and moving into the afternoon here, 1:14, Justin Thomas, Victor Hovland, Tony Finau. 1:25, Brooks Koepka, Cam Smith, Scottie Scheffler. How about that group? 1:36, Matt Fitzpatrick, Webb Simpson, Dustin Johnson there. He is in the field after playing the LIV golf event, as is Phil Mickelson, who is teeing off right after at 1:47 with Shane Lowry and Louis Oosthuizen. And then at 1:47, also obviously 1:10 there, going off 1:10. Gary Woodland, Justin Rose, and Bryson DeChambeau, who has recently committed to LIV golf. So It'll be interesting to see how the Boston crowd reacts to some of these guys and sort of the mixtures of the pairings. But as we went over earlier, Matt, with the air times, we can consume every second of it. And that's what we're here for.
Yeah, Dom, it's interesting. I think I'd mentioned to you guys the other day that I was following Bryson during one of his practice rounds, and I actually did hear people yelling some mean things to him from the gallery. So there is an element of anger there, but at the same time, I also saw a video of Phil Mickelson getting, you know, pretty warm applause from the gallery as he was playing in his practice round. So you just saw Andrew was just playing some of the video of 18. That was the other day when Bryson was coming up, and there was someone yelling at him there too. He looked aggravated by it, but he didn't respond to it. He kept his eyes focused forward. So, yeah, we'll have to see how that plays itself out. Now, another thing I wanted to ask Dom about before we go to the sound, because as you guys know who watch the Fairways of Life show now in the television side or listen to it on the digital radio side, we like to give you something that you can't get anyplace else, and that's these huge blocks of sound that's broadcast that are uninterrupted by me or our interpretation or anything else. It's just hearing from the players. Now, Dom was talking about the players in LIV Golf. You're going to hear that coming up. But what I think is interesting here, Dom, is that we had just yesterday alone more than 7 hours of sound from players coming through either the media center interview room that's behind me or outside at the interview area. From that standpoint, as we're building up, and I'm going to tell everybody what we're going to play for you guys in sequence in this huge block of player sound. But Dom, I'm just curious in terms of the philosophy that you guys had in terms of what you picked that people are about to hear.
Well, our team behind the scenes works very hard to try and give you guys something you're not going to get anywhere else. And like Matt said, with the hours of sound, because so many guys at all these major championships come through the press room, and there's a lot of questions, and there's a lot of answers, and there's a lot of fluff, and there's a lot of stuff that you don't need to hear about. And because we like to operate sort of without restrictions a little bit, we want to make sure that you hear everything you should hear and see everything that, at least in my opinion, should be seen. So we combed through everything, every second of all of it. I watched every second of all those press conferences. And what Matt was referencing, what we're going to show you guys in just a little bit here, is the absolute best of all of it. And you're going to hear and see all of it. And I think one of the things that I've said over the years to Matt, which I think absolutely has some relevance, is you can see the body language, if you're watching us on the television side, of these guys in front of the camera. You'll notice with Brooks Koepka, who you're going to see in a little bit, he seems irritated. He's frustrated. You can see it in his body language. You can hear it in his voice. Yesterday when we were talking about Phil Mickelson, we showed Phil Mickelson's press conference. Phil didn't look great. He didn't look super healthy. He didn't look super happy. So I think there's a lot to be taken from these press conferences. And I'm looking forward to sharing it with everybody. And a lot of hard work does go into it. The team and John Burkett and Andrew and everybody works very hard to make sure that we're bringing you guys what we believe is really the main storylines this week. And anything that anyone says that is relevant to the U.S. Open or otherwise, we want to make sure that you hear it right here on the Fairways of Life.
There is no doubt in my mind, no doubt, that we have the best team behind the scenes in any medium of golf broadcasting, whether it is on the digital radio side or whether it is on the streaming television side or, of course, our weekend show, which we will be live from right here at the U.S. Open at the Country Club in Brookline. So we invite you to find that as well across our affiliates around the country. The affiliate here, right where we're sitting, is New England Sports Network, or NESN, if you please. And there's been a lot of cool interaction that we've had with fans already because the show, the weekend broadcast show, is gaining popularity across the country, and people recognize you and they want to talk to you about what we're doing. And that's what's so much fun. Now, Dom mentioned Brooks Koepka. So let's start with Brooks Koepka. Now, Brooks Koepka, you're going to hear from, first of all, his best of, and then you're going to hear his comments specifically about LIV. And that's where he really seemed somewhat aggravated and didn't want to speak about it. It has launched all kinds of speculation from people to say, was he close to signing with LIV? Is that what this is all about? Remember, his brother played in the event outside of London at the Centurion Club. From there, we're going to do the same thing with Rory McIlroy. Call it a best of from Rory McIlroy. In his press conference, he's definitely taking a stepped up leadership role in terms of his perspective and his opinion. And from there, Rory was asked once again about LIV Golf. And Rory gave a very long, I would say a diplomatic, but not from the standpoint of couching or hiding his opinion, but he said it in a way that really gets you to think. Instead of just choosing a side, he said it in a way that really gets you to think about all of the factors that rightfully should be considered when you're talking about these issues. From there, John Rahm. Again, best of from John Rahm, overall thoughts from the U.S. Open champion, and then John Rahm and his comments about LIV Golf, a little bit of which you heard in our opening segment from both of those guys already. From there, someone you haven't heard from on the Fairways of Life show yet this week, and that is Colin Morikawa, and we're going to hear from the best of Colin Morikawa. How about world number one, Scottie Scheffler? What is his mindset in a longer form than the clip that we played for you to start the show? You're going to be hearing from Scottie, and then Cameron Smith, the player that very much could be expected to contend for, maybe win this U.S. Open at this venue because of the control that he has with his golf ball, but more so because of the ability that he has around the putting surfaces and how that is so prominent and so important at any U.S. Open, but certainly here at the Country Club. Folks, enjoy this U.S. Open. Thank you for your company. As I said at the start of the show, it is indeed an honor to be able to bring you a program where we can share the passion for this game, certainly the passion for the national championship that is about to unfold. Enjoy this sound.
It's always good to be back U.S. Open. You know it's going to be tough. I like that. You know, I like scores that are somewhat around even par. It's going to be difficult. You got to drive the ball well. Rough's pretty tough, and it's only going to get tougher because I'm sure they won't cut it, but golf course is good. It's kind of weird. Got a couple blind shots. But other than that, it's a great golf course. Fun golf course to play, so it should be a good week. Yeah, I know how tough it is. Yeah, it's cool. I mean, my buddies were talking to me the other day. I mean, I've lost the last four U.S. Opens I've played, I've lost to four people, which is pretty cool. You know, that's pretty special. But, yeah, I mean, I love this event. This event's always been good to me, so hopefully play well this week. A lot of discipline. Whether that means, you know, laying up off tees just to hit fairways, missing in the correct spots, not being suckered into any pin locations, whether even though it might be, you know, a go yardage for you or anything like that. But you just got to be disciplined, stay kind of always in that moment. Never get, you know, you're going to make a bunch of bogeys, try not to make a double bogey. It's always been my big goal in majors is if you never make a double bogey out here, you're doing all right. And you get out of trouble, get back in position. And that's the key to U.S. Opens. Jenna did all the planning for that. So I gave my opinion when necessary, but she did a hell of a job. So, you know, congrats to her on, you know, planning that because it was really cool. I know everybody that was a part of it had a blast, and as did we. So, but, yeah, it's nice to be back playing. I mean, anytime you can go play a major championship, I'm pretty excited, pretty locked in. Yeah, I've practiced enough. I haven't played tournament golf yet. It was, you know, the only one was a PGA, but I can take time off and still come back and win. It's not an issue if I grind like I have. You know, obviously the wedding week I didn't play or practice, but I got back into it right after, and Rick came down, spent 4 days at Medalist, 4 or 5 days at Medalist, or 4 days with him at Medalist, just grinding, making sure everything is where it needs to be. And yeah, I like where my game's at.
Obviously, Chase played last week, first live event. What do you make of the current landscape? It seems the two tours are kind of fracturing the game at the top level.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they're both. I mean, Liv's trying to make a big push for golf, and look, I mean, I love my brother. I support him in anything he does. His family, I'll always love and support him. So whatever he does, it's, you know, I'm cheering for him.
We're going to go to Stephanie here on your left.
Why have you decided to stay on the PGA Tour, and is that a permanent decision?
I mean, there's been no other option to this point. So where else are you going to go?
Liv.
I mean, as of last week, that's it. I wasn't playing last week. So I'm here at the U.S. Open. I'm ready to play U.S. Open. So, and I think it kind of sucks too. Y'all are throwing this black cloud over the U.S. Open, and I mean, it's one of my favorite events. And I don't know. why you guys keep doing that. But, you know, the more legs you give it, the more you keep talking about it.
Well, then sorry to ask another question about it, but not sorry enough not to do that. In some ways, it seems like they're offering something that would appeal to you. You're a guy who, you know, really gets up for the majors, really loves the majors. At the moment, it seems like it would be an opportunity to play less in between the majors and still play the majors. What is that attractive to you, or do you prefer your current setup?
I mean, I can come out here and play as little weeks as I want. I choose my own schedule regardless what tour I play. I come out here, I haven't played. I've played, what, match play, Augusta, PGA, and this one, so I can play as little as I want.
Did Chase say anything about his experience over there at London?
I haven't talked to him. I mean, I watched a little bit of it. Just we had it on when we were practicing, playing 18 holes. We had it on the phone. All I was doing was just listening for when I heard his name, just to watch him, see how he's doing.
Right here on my right.
Brooks, is there a figure at which you would swap tours? Does that exist? Is it as simple as that?
I haven't given it that much. I mean, I haven't given it that much thought.
Really?
I don't understand. I'm trying to focus on the U.S. Open, man. Like, I legitimately don't get it. I'm tired of the conversations. I'm tired of all this stuff. Y'all, like I said, y'all are throwing a black cloud on the U.S. Open. I think that sucks. I actually do feel bad for him for once.
Right.
Because it's a situation. Like, we're here to play, and you're talking about some event that happened last week.
Well, there's events going to be going on now for the next foreseeable future.
I know, but you can't drive a car looking in the rearview mirror, can you?
Wouldn't have thought so.
Anything else? Thanks, Brooks.
Thanks.
Have a good one.
Harry and his wife had their second child last Thursday. So he got in last night, and he'll be on the bag this week. So Niall and I's run has come to an end at this point, and we've pretty good record. Had a fourth in Dubai and a first in Canada, and you know, if I ever need someone to jump in for Harry, you know, I've got a pretty good substitute there. It certainly puts a pep in your step, gives you a lot of confidence. And I, like, going into last week, even coming off Memorial where I didn't have my best week, I still knew my game was there. I still knew that I was playing well. So regardless whether I got, I think it was the fashion in which I won last week was what gave me the most pride. Got a lead early in the back nine, lost that lead, was tied with two holes to go, and then I showed some really good resilience and birdied the last two holes to get the job done. So I think the fashion in which I won was what made me the proudest of the victory. And yeah, I mean, anytime you follow, you know, I did the same thing in 2019 going into the US Open at Pebble Beach and played pretty well there. You know, I didn't play well enough to live with Gary that week, but you know, I feel everything's, you know, it's certainly trending in the right direction, and happy with where the game's at. Yeah, Fax has been a wonderful asset to me over the last few years. You know, we started work in March of 2018. We spent a couple hours together at the Bears Club on a Monday afternoon, and then that same week on the Sunday, I had my best ever performance on the greens in a tour event. So, you know, it, what we were talking about worked straight away, and I feel like I've become a much more consistent putter since working with Brad. And if anything, it's become less thought, almost less practice in a way. Just sort of simplified the whole thing. It doesn't have to be perfect. All you're trying to do is get the ball in the hole, and a lot of visualization, a lot of hitting putts at different speeds, and getting the ball to, you know, enter on the high side, on the low side, just be so visual with it and sort of try to put a lot more feel into it the way I play the rest of the game. So yeah, Fax has been, you know, he's been a great asset for me, but also just a great friend as well, someone to lean on, someone that's played the tour for a long, long time, and you know, I can lean on him if I ever need to. Yeah, I think start of my career was probably more feast or famine in the majors. You know, I'd get hot and win, or I'd miss the cut by 10. A little more consistency going on. But that, again, that doesn't bring with it the glory that the wins do. So I'm getting back there, though. You know, my last two showings in major championships have been pretty good. That run at Augusta and then the start at Southern Hills was... you know, a very a very welcome one, considering the starts I've had previously in major championships. So I'm getting back to a place where I'm feeling a lot more comfortable with my game and a lot more comfortable at the biggest. It's not really the biggest championships in the world. It's more the biggest and toughest tests in the world. I think my game is now at a place where I feel confident going to these golf courses that are set up, you know, more difficult than everyday tour events, and knowing that I have the game and the mentality to succeed on them.
I don't want to rub your nose in a bad prediction, but you know, in February you said that this thing was dead in the water, and obviously now
the U.S. Open.
No.
We are at the U.S. Open.
That LIV Golf was dead in the water, and obviously something has changed since then. So I'm wondering, what do you feel like you got wrong, whether it's about the state of the game or about your peers, to where this thing has more life than initially thought?
Well, I guess I took a lot of players' statements at face value. I guess that's what I got wrong. You had people committed to the PGA Tour, and that's what the statements were put out, and you know, people went back on that. So I guess I took them for face value. Took them at their word, and I was wrong.
When did it occur to you you were going to pass Greg with a win?
I won the CJ Cup in October and got to 20, so I was just waiting for that 21st.
We're going to go right here to Ben on your right.
Rory, you've really emerged as the leader of the pro PGA Tour faction. Why have you taken that mantle of leadership?
Because in my opinion, it's the right thing to do. You know, the PGA Tour was created by people and, you know, tour players that came before us, the likes of Jack Nicklaus, Arnold Palmer. They created something and worked hard for something. And I just hate to see all the players that came before us and all the hard work that they've put in. It just, you know, come out to be nothing. I think one of the other things as well is, you know, the PGA Tour has certainly given me a lot of opportunities and I've benefited a lot from that. But I think what they've done for charity, you know, they've raised, if you put all the other major sporting organizations in this country, so NFL, MLB, NBA, NHL, if you put all their charitable dollars combined, the PGA Tour has raised twice as much as that in their history. So that is a massive legacy and something that I don't think people talk enough about. So, you know, when you're talking about the tour and everything that's happening right now, I think you just have to see the bigger picture than just the golf. And I think I've tried to take a wider view of everything, and I just think it's the right thing to do.
We're going to go to Christine on your left.
Hi, Rory. As you probably are aware, the 9/11 families have sent one scathing letter to Phil and four other U.S. players playing in the LIV Tour, and then they replied to Phil's non-answer yesterday with another scathing statement. Do you, obviously it's related to Saudis and the Saudi involvement in 9/11, do you understand the 9/11 family's point of view?
Yeah, of course I do. I think it, you know, everything that's happening with this tour, it legitimizes their place in the world. And I'm not saying, I mean, I'm sure not every Saudi Arabian is a bad person, and like it's very, you know, we're talking about this in such a generalized way, and I've spent a lot of time in the Middle East, and the vast majority of people that I've met there are very, very nice people, but there's bad people everywhere, and you know, the bad people that came from that part of the world did some absolutely horrendous things, and of course I understand where these families are coming from. And in this day and age, everything is just so intertwined, and it's hard to separate, you know, sport from politics, from dirty money, from clean money. It's a very convoluted world right now, and I certainly empathize with those families, and I can't imagine. I've have friends that have lost people in 9/11, and it's a really tragic thing, and I empathize with his families, and I certainly understand their concerns and frustrations with it all.
If I may just follow up, thank you. Do you consider what Phil and the others are doing to be sports washing, to be actually in business with MBS versus just playing in one tournament?
I'm not sure if they're totally. I don't think they're complicit in it. In a way, I think they have. Look, they all have the choice to play where they want to play, and you know they've made their decision. And my dad said to me a long time ago, "Once you make your bed, you lie in it." And they've made their bed, so. You know, that's their decision, and they have to live with that.
Can you talk about legacy and what your legacy means to you at this point in your career?
Yeah, I hope I'm still building on my legacy. You know, I'm in golfing terms, still young-ish. You know, even though I've been out here for a long time, I've basically spent half my life on tour at this point. But it's very important to me. It means a lot, going back to history and tradition, and putting your name on trophies that have the legends of the game on them. That's really cool, you know, and that's something that money can't buy. And legacy, reputation. At the end of the day, you know, that's all you have. You strip everything away, and you're left with what. How you made people feel and what people thought of you, and that is important to me.
Yeah, Rory, I was wondering, considering the timing of last week in Canada going up against their debut, did that light a little motivational fire maybe under you to play well that week opposite that? And do you find yourself at all recruiting some of your peers to stay with the PGA Tour right now in conversations and, you know, things like that?
I don't think it gave me motivation. I mean, look, I talked about going out there on Sunday and trying to get my 21st win and all that. I mean, a little bit petty, I guess, in a way. But, did it help me win or it helped me keep a level of intensity up? Probably. But, no, I don't think, I don't think what was happening in London gave me any more motivation. You know, I wanted to go there and play well like I do every week. And, you know, I got hot on the weekend, and it was nice to get a victory. Recruitment-wise, everyone's their own person out here, and they have their own goals and their own beliefs. My goals, I've realized, are a lot different than some other people's goals out here, and again, that's fine. Everyone's different, and they make their own decisions based on what they feel is right for themselves, so I don't feel I need to recruit anyone. Or I don't work for the PGA Tour, they work for me, so it's, you know, people make their own decisions, and for me, this, you know, my schedule and where I play and having the ability to pick and choose the courses I want to go to and what's going to give me the best chance to be successful and build on my career, build on my legacy, you know, it's nice to have all those options open to be able to choose from.
Final.
I just have one more related, if you don't mind, back on the main event, of course, which is Liv. But friendships aside, is there any part of you as a player that looks at those joining as not so much surrendering, but almost recognizing they're not going to be as competitive or can't be as competitive, and do you lose respect for that? Sorry.
No, I understand. Yes, because a lot of these guys are, you know, in their late 40s or, you know, in Phil's case, you know, early 50s. And, yeah, I think everyone in this room, and they would say to you themselves that their best days are behind them. And that's why I don't understand for the guys that are a similar age to me going, because I would like to believe that my best days are still ahead of me, and I think theirs are too. So that's where it feels like you're taking the easy way out.
Yeah. Last question, center right.
Rory, notwithstanding, this is actually repeating what
notwithstanding that and what you've just said, if we specify Phil Mickelson, have you lost some respect for him?
As a golfer, no. I think his you know, he won a major championship 13 months ago. You know, one of the, you know, probably one of the crowning achievements of his career and one of the most impressive achievements in the history of the game of golf. So as a golfer, I have the utmost respect for Phil. I've been disappointed with how he's went about what he's done. But I think he has come back and shown some remorse about how he's handled some things. So I think he's learned from that. And I'm like, who am I to sit up here and give Phil a lesson on how to do things? I mean, he's had a wonderful career and he's his own man. And he's a great addition to the field this week. So, you know, am I disappointed he's taken the route that he's taken? I am. But I still respect him tremendously.
It's been a wonderful year. It wasn't easy having to ship the trophy a little early and not enjoy the last few weeks, but obviously I understand it's needed. I've defended before tournaments, obviously not majors, but usually you go to the same venue. It's something you're familiar with. It's a bit of a weird factor to defend a tournament on a golf course that nobody really has played in almost and since the Ryder Cup, really, right? So it's a little different, but looking forward to it, you know. I played the front nine yesterday. I think it's a wonderful course. I like to think myself of a bit of a historian of the game, and to come to a place like this, you know, where the whole Francis We Met world happened, it's very unique, very unique. And I love to hear the stories and you know, little nuances about a golf course like this, especially a clubhouses. Like this, right? I mean, I've never gone to a golf course where there's a town before you see the course. It's very unique, so I'm really looking forward to seeing the back nine. It's a beautiful design. I always love coming to places and courses that were designed so long ago, because even though they add tee boxes, the uniqueness of the architecture from back then still stands. And I think a big testament of it, of what I saw, is our third and fourth hole, where it's one long fairway connected, but you have the rocks in between. It's very, very cool. So I'm looking forward to see the rest of the course. Well, I knew it coming in, but it's not the biggest greens out there, right? And the ones that have a healthy size don't play like it, like the par 3 sixth. Right? That's a bigger green, but quite a bit of slopes. You know, you can easily end up off it, even though on paper it is big. So I think that's the biggest challenge. I wouldn't say that the narrowest fairways we've played on a U.S. Open, but, you know, second shots into the green are going to be important. And that rough around the greens is about as healthy as I've seen in a while. So, you know, short game's going to be obviously key in a U.S. Open, but especially on smaller greens, you're going to need to use it quite a bit. There's no extra pressure. No, I mean, I want to do it again. So it's pretty much the same as it's always been with the, you know, different factor being that I've already won a major, so that makes it, obviously, I feel like a lot of the pressure I used to put on myself is not really there, and I feel like I can enjoy it a little bit more, and know that you don't need to do anything special to get it done, right? It's easy to think that you need to be playing perfect golf, and I remember watching my highlights of Sunday last year, and I thought I played one of the best rounds of my life, and I kept thinking, I cannot believe how many fairway bunkers I hit that day. How many greens I missed and how many putts I missed. But, you know, it's golf, and that's how it is. So you truly don't have to play perfect, and that's, I think, the best lesson I can take from that.
Hey, John, just with everything going on in golf right now, mm-hmm. and with Liv, there's been a lot of thoughts. You know, Rory was talking earlier about voicing his opinion on the players who've gone, the players who've stayed, and just the state of the tour. I'm just curious where your thoughts are for you personally and also broadly in terms of where you see golf. Where you see golf right now and where it's going?
I mean, it's a bit of a vague question within what's going on. If you can be more specific, it would be easier. It's just, there's so much that's been going on that I don't want to go on for 35 minutes.
For you, is that something you've thought about in terms of you know, an alternate league, and how would you weigh the value of what the PGA Tour has done versus what, you know, mm-hmm. other players are going to do?
You know, I feel for Jay Monahan. If you see his time as a commissioner, he had to deal with COVID and now this. I don't know if he signed up for all this or not, but I consider the PGA Tour has done an amazing job giving us the best platform for us to perform. I do see the appeal that other people see towards the LIV Golf. I do see some of the, how do I put this delicately, points or arguments they can make towards why they prefer it. To be honest, part of the format is not really appealing to me. Shotgun 3 days to me is not a golf tournament, no cut. It's that simple. I want to play against the best in the world in a format that's been going on for hundreds of years, right? So that's what I want to see. And yeah, money is great, but when Kelly and I, this first thing happened, we started talking about it. We're like, will our lifestyle change if I got $400 million? No, it will not change one bit. Truth be told, I could retire right now with what I've made and I've lived a very happy life and not play golf again. So I've never really played the game of golf for monetary reasons. I play for the love of the game, and I want to play against the best in the world. I've always been interested in history and legacy, and right now the PGA Tour has that. There's some meaning when you win the Memorial Championship. There's some meaning when you win Arnold Palmer's event at Bay Hill. There's some meaning when you win L.A., Torrey, some of these historic venues. And that, to me, matters a lot, right? I have, you know, after this winning this past U.S. Open, you know, only me and Tiger have won at Torrey Pines, and we're both the golf course that we like, making putts on the 18th hole, right? That's a memory I'm going to have forever that not many people can say. So my heart is with the PGA Tour. That's all I can say. It's not my business or my character to judge anybody who thinks otherwise. And for a lot of people, I'm not going to lie, those next 3-4 years are worth basically their retirement plan they're giving them. It's a very nice compensation to then retire and sail off to the sunset. And if that's what you want, that's fine.
Just as a quick follow-up, obviously, you know, fellow countryman Sergio's playing for them.
Yeah.
What have the conversations like been with him in terms of his decision-making process?
Zero.
Yeah.
Like I said, not my business. He's given golf, European Tour, and the PGA Tour 20, 25 years of his life. If his decision is to go play and, you know, play less events and enjoy, it's his decision. I mean, it's not my job to judge, right? And that's all I can say. I don't know what's going to happen. I think the one thing that keeps coming to me out of all this and what can happen, I hope the Ryder Cup doesn't suffer. I think the Ryder Cup is the biggest attraction the game of golf has to bring new people in. And I had such a good time with him on the golf course and with on the previous one in Paris. I hope we don't lose the essence and the aspect that the Ryder Cup is. That's one of my biggest concerns, to be honest. You know, it's an event we all play for free, and it's one of our favorite weeks, win or lose. And I think that says a lot about the game and where I wish it'd be at.
Yeah, thank you.
Are you surprised that LIV has kind of gotten this far? And then I guess the second part to this question is, do you feel maybe that the cloud is less now that they've had a tournament in the books? You know, the cloud is less this week than it was the last few months, or is it more?
I'm not surprised. I mean, hundreds of millions of dollars are a pretty good damn reason for people to decide and go. And I see a lot of comments, you know, disregarding it, but the high majority of the population, if they offered you $100 million or more for the next 4 years, a lot of people would go. Right? So I'm not surprised at the amount of players that went. I don't know about the cloud. I think the events are spaced out just enough to where when the next one comes, we're going to have the same talk all over again, right? But I did watch a bit of the broadcast, and to me, the only thing they had to talk about is the fact that if Charles Schwartzel won, was going to make $4.7 million, right? When I hear stories of Seve and great players in the past, yes, obviously financial stability is amazing, but when they talk about majors or when Jack talks about the U.S. Open and winning the U.S. Open and winning the Open, it's more than just the money. Prices would always go up, and I consider I make plenty of money doing what I do, obviously. But, you know, nobody's talking about winning that event in London with the essence that some other events have. And that, to me, is what's attractive, being able to consider yourself champion of this with the history that comes with it. So I don't know. We'll see. I really can't tell you. Like I've said all along, I'm about as far away from this whole dynamic as can be. You know, I go about my business. My job is to hit a golf ball to the hole as as quick as I can, and that's about it, and that's where I stay. Can't really say much else than that.
Right here on your right.
John, if more players go to this tour, if more good players attempt to buy this money, what is the tipping point at which the PGA Tour really is negatively impacted?
I have no idea. I really don't know. I'm sure that's something that the Jay and Andy Pads are thinking about. And, you know, I'm assuming there'll be changes in the future that would probably try to prevent that from happening. But I don't know. I think the one thing we've got to realize is this LIV Golf is a 48-player tour. What about the other hundreds of players that want to make it, right? They don't really have a path to get there. You get signed or not, but you need some type of a name to get there, right? What about the other 150 players that are worthy, probably have a lot of talent, but haven't shown it yet? They all need a platform. Again, PGA Tour has been that platform forever. And that's all I can say. I mean, one of the reasons why I made it on tour so easily or quickly is because the PGA Tour had faith in me, and I was given 7 starts as an amateur before I even turned pro. 7. I played, I believe, 5 events as an amateur and gained a ton of experience, right? So I don't know if you can do that when they're limited to 48 players. That's one of the things, right? I don't know what's going to happen, but it's more, let's say, the people that are out of that elite small number, what's going on with them. They all need a platform, and again, PGA Tour is the best platform.
Yeah, as of 2 weeks ago, probably really bad. This entire year has been weird. You know, I've been known for my irons, and I've been known to hit cuts, and that shot just hasn't been there. And, you know, I went to the range probably more than I have over a long period of time, and this past week has been a real good grind and a real good just kind of grit to try and figure it out. So this week we're here to just play golf, learn how to make some birdies, and hopefully finish on top.
Colin, the live question.
Or oh, here we go.
A live question. Yeah, here we go. You obviously, well, I'm sure that you have huge respect for Phil as a player. Have you lost a little bit of respect for him because of what he's doing with LIV and all that sort of stuff?
As a person? No, not at all. I mean, look, everyone has their own position to choose what they want. I mean, you've heard that from multiple guys out here. But it doesn't change who I view Phil as, right? I mean, this is someone, you know, obviously I watched Tiger growing up, but Phil was the guy that was right there. I mean, he was still an idol for many, many kids my age, right? And then he's going to continue to be that way. Look, just how we talked about, you know, a year ago about, you know, people's mental state and not feeling well or not feeling happy. We don't know what's going on behind the scenes of people's lives, right? You guys see us out here and you guys can make assumptions about what we do, but in reality, you don't know what's going on behind curtains, and that's for us to respect the lines of what they want to share and what they don't want to share. And I think these guys have made their decisions. I mean, it is upsetting because, I mean, look, I've been out here for 3 years, and I never would have imagined this is what we'd have to deal with 3 years in as being a professional. You know, all I dreamt about was playing on the PGA Tour, making putts to win tournaments, winning majors. And, you know, for me, it's just how do I get back to focusing on that? Because this has been such a big distraction. This has been such a talk where, you know, it's enjoyable to talk about it because, you know, we all like gossip, right? We all like the drama. But at the end of the day, that's what it is. You know, we're all trying to assume or make assumptions or make, you know, guesses about what, you know, this or that or who's going or what's going to happen next. Is that we know just as much as you. You know, we really do. I really don't know what's going on behind the scenes. So, but going back to your question as it relates to Phil, yeah. I mean, I haven't lost respect because he has done amazing things for this game.
You do know roughly what's going on. I mean, you've read the papers, you're an intelligent guy. But
you guys are writing the papers, right?
Well, yeah.
So that's the thing is like, you know, one of my best friends said, you know, he just texted me about this tweet from a random account saying, you know, hey, there's these rumors. No, like it's crazy to see all these rumors because that's what they are, right? So, yeah, I can read all these things, but, you know, everyone tells their kids don't believe what's on the internet. And that's what we're doing. That's exactly what we're doing right now, right? So I understand it's your guys' job to get all the details, but at the end of the day, I think we're asking the wrong people.
LIV is not a fantasy. We're not making it up.
But what answers would you want out of me? Like, I can't tell you anything about it either. You know?
I think we're going to move to Dan on the right.
Okay. I was going to ask you,
you haven't been one of these guys who's been involved in a lot of these rumors. Is it still a distraction for you?
I think it is. I mean, I know when the tournament happened for Liv, and you know, I wake up Thursday morning and I'm interested to see what's going to go on. So, yeah, you know, it is a distraction. And I think I read something or I saw what Brooks said earlier today. And I mean, I think he's onto something, because we're here at a major championship and we're here to win the U.S. Open and we're here to play and beat everyone else in this field, in this great field. And that's what it's about. You know, I think when you wake up and, you know, I'm texting my agent or I'm texting my friend about, like, hey, did you hear about this? Or, you know, I'm getting news about this. You know, it's fun. It's exciting because it is gossip. Who doesn't like gossip, right? But it also becomes a distraction. And you don't want to be focused on this or that. You want to be focused on playing golf. And I'd say, you know, over the past, you know, 6 months, it has been, I'm not going to blame it on any part of my golf game. Like, put that aside. But it is an extra distraction on thinking about this, thinking about that, and worrying about, you know, who's going to ask what.
You've had such a smooth, steady ascent in your pro career. How are you handling this rare blip in performance?
I think just, you know, it's taught me a lot about what kind of player I am, right? I want to be able to just play golf. I think the best players out here, it doesn't matter if it's good or bad, they're able just to put the ball in the hole. And I've been so worried about trying to hit this cut, like almost forcing a cut, that why not just play my miss, or why not play my shot shape? I think that's what Rory, Tiger, all the greats before us, they worked with what they got. And normally it is a cut, and normally when I'm playing worse, it's even more of a cut. But it just hasn't been that, and it's almost had a little draw shape to it. So this week maybe we'll see a couple more draws, or, you know, 2 yard draws, that's what I call a draw, and just play golf. I think it's been frustrating because all the prep has felt really good this year. The results just haven't been there. But hopefully we can put it together for 4 good rounds and finish up this year on a high note.
What's different? Why is it happening?
Why is the cut not happening? Just face control. Like, spin control with the irons, face not being able to keep it as open. Couldn't tell you why. I've gone through every video on my phone of my swing. I've gone through nearly every swing thought I can think of since college. And we just haven't hit the jackpot yet. So we'll get it back. I mean, I'm not saying I'm going to hit draws for the rest of my life. I'm sure cuts will come back in the next month or so. But it's just, you know, it's a weird little thing in golf. But
I like the challenge. I think these events are really hard, obviously. And for me, I think it's kind of fun just challenging yourself like that. And this style of golf, I think, really suits how I play and suits mentally how I approach tournaments. And so for me, I'm excited for this week and getting started. That was a really cool event for me. I'd won the U.S. Junior that year. It was a really cool year for me in golf. I have great memories of this tournament. I have good memories. I was walking around with my coach here in 2013, and he was here in 99 when Justin made the putt, and he was teaching Justin at the time. So we both have great memories of this place. And I remember being down in pretty much all my matches and coming back on the 3 that I won. I came back late on all of them, and you know, I think I made a big putt against maybe Brandon Hagee, somebody. I think it may have been Brandon on 17, but I have good memories of this place. It was a lot of fun. You know, I mean, I think you can learn anything from that kind of, you know, just really failure. I think that's always a good learning time. And so for me, I'm not going to sit there and be like, oh my gosh, how did this happen? How could I ever miss a cut? What's going on? But kind of just sitting back and looking and being like, well, I could have approached this differently. Mentally, I could have been a little bit different approaching this shot. And it's more stuff like that versus like, oh man, like I missed a cut. Like, what am I doing out here? Like, I got all these things to work on. It was more just kind of sitting back and saying, you know what, I could have been better mentally here and here. And other than that, that could have changed the tournament for me. And so just little changes, it's nothing big. And you know, I was able to have a nice reset after that and play good the following week.
Yeah, I love it, mate. It's probably my favorite US Open venue I think I've been to. Lots of options off the tee, have to strike the ball well, obviously, and yeah, just a real typical old school course. I love it. Yeah, it feels good, mate. I think the last couple of weeks, the driver's got me a little bit in trouble. Haven't hit as many fairways as I'd like. And the rough the last couple of weeks has been pretty brutal as well. So lots of chopping out and practicing my wedges for this week. So hopefully I can hit some more fairways and make some more birdies.
I'm back with the almost compulsory live golf question, Cam. I mean, how have you viewed that from a distance?
I haven't too much, mate, to be honest. This week my focus is to play golf. I'm far from the smartest person in the room, and I'm not a politician. I'm here to follow a white golf ball around and kind of see what it does.
So you're not tempted?
What was that?
You're not tempted to make the jump like some others have done?
Like I said, mate, I'm here to play the US Open. You know, everyone's answered the question differently, I think, this week, but my focus is just to be here and play good golf.